We'd like to welcome everybody to the study session, Mesa City Council for Thursday, April 30, 2009. Thank you. We'll begin with the first item on our agenda, which is to review the agenda for next Monday's City Council meeting. Page two. Mr. Brady.
Mayor, I just want to bring it to the council's attention on the reappointment of the magistrates. We did have a request from a citizen, or well, an individual, David Rodriguez, who had requested to be notified when the council was going to be considering these reappointments so he could come and meet with the council. We have tried on numerous occasions to contact Mr. Rodriguez with the information he provided to us. As of this date, we've not been able to get hold of him. So just wanted to make the council aware of that. We'll continue to try to make contact with him. But at this point, we've not been successful. We have phone numbers, but we have not been able to get any recurrent calls at this time.
Okay. Thank you. Page three, Councilmember Summers.
Item 60 was deleted, the terms for fitness equipment for fire and others. I was curious as to why.
After reviewing the way the agenda had been written, this the agenda had been written, we felt that it needed to be better clarified, and so I asked it to be reposted again for the following week. Okay. To clarify what the actual purpose was. It's really what's driving this is we need to replace equipment at the multi-gen center. It's over 11 years old, and we have people who are paying a fee to go use it. It's time for some of that to be replaced.
Okay, that'll work. Thank you.
Page four. Page five. Page six. Page seven. Okay.
It's going to be another beautiful meeting.
We move on to item number two, which is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the Arts and Cultural Department's budget, including but not limited to the Arizona Museum for Youth and the Mesa Historical Museum. Mr. Zietzman.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Council. The discussion this morning will focus on, as the title says, expanding Mesa's story by dealing with two parallel challenges that we recently were faced with and needed to resolve in the short term and also through the next financial year, which would have an impact on our overall budget. I should just say right at the outset, I want to pay tribute to the leadership of both the Arizona Museum for Youth and the Mesa Historical Society and the Mesa Historical Museum for being constructively engaged in this process over the past few weeks. It's been difficult, and they've had to deal with some very challenging problems. We have representatives of them in the audience, and I thank them for their work, but I also want to make sure that you know that they are here and would be happy to answer questions you may have to them directly after my presentation. I want to start with some background on the story of the arts and culture's approach to some of the financial challenges ahead. Some of you may recall in our reduction in workforce exercise towards the end of last year, we proposed to you as one of the solutions a shared resource model in which the three institutions in the Arts and Culture Department, the Mesa Arts Center, the Arizona Museum for Youth, and the Arizona Museum of Natural History, decided to identify those areas in our resources where we could work together and maximize efficiencies by sharing resources. So that's been our approach philosophically and practically, and in the last 4 months we've been working like that practically and seen a lot of savings, not just financially, but in other ways too. It increases clearly the collaborative level between the organizations, but more importantly, it's much more efficient and effective in terms of use of resource. And some practical examples we are sharing currently, we have a sort of a central maintenance approach. We have a central custodial, marketing, and exhibition preparatory and installation team approach. And we plan these things collectively and make sure that the teams can get to do everything that needs to be done by just planning it carefully. And I pay tribute to the staff for really stepping up and making this work. It takes a lot from staff, but it's part of a way forward. So collectively, we still offer a broad diversity of arts and cultural experiences for the citizens of Mesa, but within collective finite means. And that's an approach that will inform how we approach the next slide. And just to give you some background of the parallel challenges, which I referred to, a few weeks ago, the Arizona Museum for Youth, which is supported by a private 501c3 board named the Amy Friends, who have significantly supported that organization over the past years, many, many years, with funding and support in many other ways, and seen that organization grow. But specifically, when the budget of the Arizona Museum for Youth was cut drastically by 50% 3.5 years ago, this organization, the Amy Friends, stepped up and said we would take care of a significant burden and fund and raise funds to fund some of the operational expenses of Amy. They've been doing that with yeoman effort over the last few years, and we all owe them a debt of gratitude. However, of course, with the current economy and some other challenges, they came to us a few weeks ago and made a presentation to city leadership and the mayor to say, we just don't think we can sustain these levels of funding from 1st of July, the next financial year, specifically not to support operational types of expenses. They still want to be involved and raise funds for projects and exhibitions as far as they can, but they have told us very clearly that they wouldn't be able to sustain the current. That poses a real problem for some of the resources needed to run Amy. And in addition, Amy has seen some drop in their attendance, and we project that they'll probably miss the projected revenue by about $30,000 at the end of this financial year due to the economy and some other factors, which we could speak to if you really need detail. Similarly, at about the same time, the Mesa Historical Museum and the Mesa Historical Society, which is their 501c3 private fundraising board, came to the city and reported a similar challenge. As some of you may recall, the Mesa Historic Society received a grant from the city of Mesa for a number of years, which was a significant element in their operation and their existence. And since the cut of that 3.5 years ago when that grant was eliminated, this Mesa Historical Society stepped up similarly to the Friends and said, we can't let this valuable resource go away. Mesa really needs to preserve and protect the story of Mesa and the history of Mesa, and we're gonna help with that. And they have. They've done great work in the last few years, and we again owe them a debt of gratitude. But again, the economy was just a hill too steep to climb, and they have come to us and said we can't see ourselves get past July this year. We're gonna run out of cash resource and face closure at that time. So two parallel challenges which we had to deal with. The Mesa Historical Museum deals with other real challenges in the sense that they have a very unideal location out in Lehigh. Not only is it physically far away from where people are, but the location itself is an old historical building which requires a lot of maintenance and care and costs, and they just can't do that anymore. So some challenges that really threatened their existence. And so there were some short-term threats presented to us, and short-term by that I mean within the next 2-3 months we would have seen some real difficulties for both organizations. And some of these threats included that Amy would have been really challenged to operate the way they need to in the new financial year without the Friends funding. The Historical Museum faces closure by July this year. Mesa would lose valuable Amy resources. And they would also lose a really invaluable collection of Mesa's history and objects and artifacts and a really great collection that have been built up over many years that would be lost or at least threatened. And then one of the new products that they added with great success a year ago was the Cactus League Experience Play Ball, which is a proprietary name that this museum has for that exhibition, which has really increased their attendance and revenue, but not enough. But it's a great addition to the story of Mesa again. That would be threatened, and we may lose that. So putting these solutions on the same table and against the background of a collective way of thinking, which I outlined earlier, we decided to try and craft a solution that would build on the strengths of these organizations rather than do the sort of intuitive thing, which would be close down, shrink down, hunker down, shrink everything. We decided to take the high road and look for the strengths in both organizations and craft a solution that would build on that and reposition the role that museums play. And again, maybe Mesa could take a leadership role here. I think we have seen in historical museums, specifically around the country, not just here, that the current model of the historical museum doesn't work anymore. It certainly doesn't resonate with the younger generation anymore. The notion that you would go into a building with a single narrative and you start here in the 1800s and walk through and get to 2000 at the other end of dusty, musty exhibitions, that model is challenged and certainly isn't working anymore. The business model doesn't work. So we need to reconfigure that in any case. The facility for where the Mesa Historical Museum is currently housed out at Lehigh will remain open to the public with the current exhibits running, including the Playball exhibit, the Wallace and Ladmo, and the Searching for Mesa exhibits, would be running until the end of September this year. We then want to expand Amy's mission and the role Amy plays to include elements of Mesa's history and Mesa's story, and kind of create an opportunity for folks to come into a place that's exciting and new and an educational experience for young and old that would include art and history. There are art and history museums. We don't want to go down that road. We certainly don't want to bifurcate the message. This is going to be one message of Mesa's story, which would include creative artistic elements and historical elements in a very creative new way, and as I said, possibly set a new kind of a benchmark of how these things could be done by others who would follow. We also want to enhance the Amy staff by adding the current director of the Mesa Historical Museum to the staff of Amy as of the 1st of July. The additional costs would be offset by additional revenue that will be coming from we think a stronger attendance at Amy because of the addition of the Playball exhibit, which I think will draw lots of people and therefore revenue. And the Mesa Historical Society still has a number of sponsors and revenue streams coming in, which would then revert to the city, which would offset some of the additional costs. We want to move the Cactus League experience and reopen it in time for the spring training season next year in February, in one of Amy's galleries. And currently, for you who've maybe recently visited, their newest exhibit just opened recently, the bead exhibit in the South Gallery, is where we are going to be positioning the Playball experience for February. It's about a 2,000 square foot space, a little bit more than they currently have out at Lehigh, but with the exhibit values that we would be able to bring to it and put the city's marketing resources behind it, we think we can create a really exciting relaunch of a new concept in a new space downtown in the museum precinct, very close to the Hohokam Stadium, and really position that as a winner for everybody, for all concerned. So that's one piece of the Lehigh story. We also want to carve out another way of treating the Mesa Historical Society's historic collection, in addition now to the Playball. And we want to take pieces of Mesa's history to where people are. And we want to have a little piece of Mesa's history living in the City Hall lobby, maybe in the library lobby, maybe at the Mesa Arts Center, maybe at the CVB. So wherever people are, and there may be some businesses or malls who would welcome us as well in parts of where the folks congregate, so that you could go somewhere and discover a piece of Mesa's history as you go about your daily business. That simply means that thousands upon thousands of more people will discover Mesa's history than currently. Currently, only those who know where it is, who go there, who are dedicated enough to drive out to Lehigh, will discover the really deep and rich history this city has. We think we can do better than that, and again, create a new model for exposing folks to our story. So that's the second piece. The third piece of a solution that we have would be the remaining piece of the collection, and it's a significant collection of objects, would remain in storage in the Lehigh facility, and we would take care of the facility so that that collection is protected and looked after until we have another plan with it. And what's that plan? I don't know. We will work that out. Currently, our eye is on the ball that says, what do we do in the short term? But it beats the alternative. And so we will, some of it will go into storage, some of the historic story will go around Mesa, and the play ball for the short term will go into the AMI space. We will also ask the current director of the Mesa Historical Society and the museum to work out a phase out and a phase in plan of how to get out of the Lehigh facility, how to get into the AMI facility with some, how to do the rotation. So that plan will guide our actions over the next few months and maybe possibly year until the economy improves and we can think about growth again. The idea is not to split these two institutions again in the future. It'll be one new concept that might grow. We don't know what the future roles of the two 501c3 boards may be. They may choose to continue to support elements of what they're supporting now in the way that they are now. They may choose to merge, as has happened with the Mesa Arts Centers Foundation, came from two boards who merged. That is up to them. They have their passions, they have their affinities, and we respect that, and we think they will work out, and we will work with them to find the best way forward. We certainly don't want to lose any of their support. They have been great. We need that. There's no way we can do this without them, and we want to work with them in terms of a structure. We will have an MOU between the city and the Mesa Historical Society in the short term to guide our relationship, who does what, when. And we've already started a very, very fruitful discussion with them in a lot of detail about how that might work. And again, I pay credit to their efforts. We will obviously need to make sure, again, that the story is told in the right tone. This is Mesa taking the high road, expanding our story during troubled times, doing more with less, exposing people to more of our resources than before, and not the opposite story. That's what we're not doing. We will get a lot of in-kind support from the city of Mesa, which is always the case anyway. That's the way this city works. That's the story in a nutshell. It's a big story told in very few words, but I want to leave opportunity for you to not only just ask me questions, but feel free to invite any of the two boards and managements of the other institutions if you want to ask them specific questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zietzman. Councilmember Richens.
I just have a couple of quick questions. Is there any debt associated with either organization on the books of either organization?
There's no debt at the Mesa Historical Museum or at AMI.
Okay. And then I know there's other employees that worked at the Mesa Historical Museum. Is there any idea about them? And are there any associated healthcare, retirement costs associated with them and this merger coming together?
Their staff are all non-benefited at this point, so that's the answer to that question. I have had discussions with the Mesa Historical Society, and that will continue as to how we approach the current staff and what we will be doing with them. The Mesa Historical Society and I just looked at a cash flow exercise yesterday where we played around with a number of scenarios. We will need support from staff for at least the next 6 months to help us with the plan to move one exhibit to AMI, the rotation, and to catalog their collection for storage. So we will certainly need to rely on their resource for the foreseeable future, and the Mesa Historical Society is working on ways to support the staff needed for this period. The city is not making a longer-term commitment to anybody but the director.
Okay. There was some talk with the previous council about the disposition of Lehigh School and who owned it. City of Mesa still owns that property, as I understand.
Well,
is that true? Or?
Well, technically, the Mesa Historical Society owns the property, but there's a reversionary clause in the deed that says if they don't use it as a museum, it reverts back to the city.
Okay.
So ownership is one of those legal questions. They can't do anything with it. They can't sell it, but they own it.
Okay.
I don't know what that means, but
yeah.
That's how it is.
Hence the fuzziness around that piece,
yes,
of it. There's a lot of
it. Like my car.
I think what it means is they own it, but they can't sell it.
That's what I said.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure we all understood. They own it, but they can't sell it.
I didn't understand it.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
And just a clarification on that point, the city owns the eastern half of the property where the museum is, and the museum has the title to the western half, but there is a reversionary clause. If it stops being used for a museum, then the it reverts to the city.
Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Finter.
I serve as the council liaison to the Amy Friends Board. Wonderful organization. I can tell you I'm not a big arts guy, but having been involved for 10 months with that organization, with the staff at Amy, just top-notch folks.
I agree.
What people won't realize is the Friends organization expended a tremendous amount of resources to try and maintain these last few years. They really ran down their fund balances and tremendous sacrifices, and I feel for them. I appreciate when you said a consistent story when you just finished up with your presentation. If you look at reinventing the fire department, completely doing different things at the police department, this is a consistent story. The message I was hoping to get out is with our arts and cultural group, and especially Amy and those, you are a tremendously valuable part of this city and these organizations as a community. I hear the mayor, and I totally support his approach to how important these organizations are. I hope no one will take away from this discussion that anything other than we truly care and want those organizations to thrive in Mesa. It's just these difficult financial times. So hopefully in the future we'll be able to reevaluate as we go, and I appreciate staff trying to come up with a win-win situation. So thank you very much, and thank you to all the Amy Friends and board.
Thank you, Councilmember. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you. To follow up on Councilmember Finter's comments, although I'm not currently on the Amy board, I did serve on it for 7 years, and I was on the board when the city cuts occurred. And by way of background for the community, the Amy Friends nonprofit has partnered with the city since the 1980s. And until 3 years ago, they had raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for capital projects and exhibits at the museum, particularly helping with the expansion of the museum as well as the creation of the Artville exhibit. So their resources were incredibly valuable, but they focused on capital needs and exhibition needs for the years and had great success in raising funds for that for more than 20 years. And then after the funding was cut at the museum, the Amy Friends had several hundred thousand dollars in reserve that were intended for use for future capital and exhibit projects, but instead redirected their fundraising efforts to maintain the gallery educators for the last 3 years. Again, they have spent several hundred thousand dollars in private funds to help sustain that. I was also on the Mesa Historical Museum board when the city funding was cut. And again, that partnership with the city goes back to the mid-1980s. And for many years, the city contributed as much as 75% of the museum's budget throughout the years. When the funding was eliminated 3 years ago, the city funding was almost 40% still of the budget. And that organization and its board of directors has raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, both in cash and in kind, to completely recreate the exhibits, update the exhibits. And as Johan said, in the arts world, museums and history museums in particular nationwide are having a difficult challenge in sustaining audiences and trying to figure out new and innovative ways to bring their story to the community. And so what we have here really are two incredibly valuable assets to our community with very supportive boards that have a track record of success in raising funds and have a long, both of which have a more than 20-year history of partnering with the city in supporting both organizations. And I think we do have a very good opportunity here to, I hate to use the word, but, reinvent the presentation that we do of our arts and cultural resources. And I want to compliment the boards and staff of both those organizations, as well as our city staff, Mesa Arts Center and Johan, and city manager, for taking leadership to try to craft a solution that I think will be beneficial both in the short term and long term for the city. We've seen the example of the Cactus League exhibit has dramatically increased attendance at the museum, and I think in a setting that is more centrally located offers a great opportunity for us to showcase the tale of baseball in Mesa as well. So I want to compliment all those who participated in the project. Thank you,
Council Member. Any other questions? Do you have something to say?
Mayor, I was just going to say, if it's on the conclusion, we will move forward with these recommendations. So one of the things I want to make sure is that direction is we're going to be moving forward with this. What we're doing here has been proposed by Johan to move forward with the bringing in. There was really to the city is adding an additional staff person, but really it, beyond that is coming up with this new model, I guess we could say, and working with the transition with the employees from the other, from the Historical Society also. So if that's the direction of the council, we will move in that direction.
I see heads nodding, so I guess that's the direction. I'd like to say one thing, because we sort of danced around the issue, which is, the basic question is, so what? I mean, what if FAMI goes under? What if the Historical Museum goes under? And there's many in the community that would say, big deal. You know, that's something. If they can't make it on their own, that they shouldn't exist. Well, there's a lot of things we do in our community that couldn't make it on our own. Parks would never exist. City pools wouldn't exist. There's a lot of things that we do as a community and as a city government that don't pass muster as far as paid admission, paying the whole thing, streets. There's a lot of stuff that we participate in. And I hope we don't leave this with the idea that this is somehow some rescue plan or bailout, even though at the end of the day that might be what it is. But, you know, let's get beyond the touchy-feely about looking at art and preserving history, which I believe has a certain place in a community, an important role in a community. I think this is a good business investment for the city, for our community, for a couple reasons. Number one, I guess we could choose as a council to go down to what many would refer to as a bare bones operation. We literally could gut this city and provide the most basic of services. And as a government, we would be fulfilling perhaps a most basic purpose. I think we would destroy the community as we do that, because a community consists of what makes a community great is much more than simply the most basic of services. Mm-hmm. You know, community goes beyond a city government. A city government plays a role, an important role in that. And I think arts, culture, history, parks, recreation, those things are all important, very extremely important pieces of a community. And we should, as a community, strive to preserve those, because they make up the heart and soul of who we are and what we are. There's a reason why people move from one place to another place, and that's because they see opportunity, they see quality of life, they do whatever. They vote with their feet. We've talked about that. You know, you can't have it both ways. We cannot have a community that's sustainable and is thriving and that does not turn into a blighted area and abandon those items of life that complete the full community. So that's why I completely support whatever we can do to not only help our institutions, but to help them to thrive. I recognize the difficulties they've come through, but I think that, as with many of our other departments, as Councilmember Finter said, this is a great time to relook at how we do these things. And I think what we've come upon is, I believe, an idea that will not only preserve these, but actually set the foundation where they can thrive. I would not view this as a, if this were simply a bailout to get them through another year, I would not support that. Mm. I could not support that. Mm. And I think I made it very clear to the members of both boards that I would not support any city involvement that would simply be an infusion of cash to get them through the next period. I wholeheartedly support what I believe is a change in direction, a change in a vision that I think sets a foundation for a great future, adds to a lot of opportunity, and prepares for when we come out of this, as we've done with other departments in the city and other functions in the city, that when we do come out of this economic situation, that we are prepared to take full advantage of those opportunities and to grow these institutions into the great things that they have yet to become. I mean, not that they haven't been good, but I think they can be great. The other thing is that we have a vested interest as a city. A major part of our downtown is the museum area. The thing that brings people in and has the potential to bring even more people in, both on a temporary and a permanent basis, are our museums. Once again, this is not touchy-feely, but we have a real business incentive to do this, because the city is the biggest investor and is the biggest landowner. And has more at risk in downtown than any other individual party. And so we have a real vested interest in not only maintaining what we have, but also building upon what we have. And I think it's important that we have institutions such as these, which is why from day one I have supported a move of the Historical Society out of Lehigh to the downtown area. I think not only is the Lehigh a very challenging situation, I mean, it's a nice historical building that you've got to have a roadmap to get to. And the truth of the matter is that people who come in from out of town, for example, for the Cactus League experience, are not going to go somewhere that it's a hard time to get to. We want to bring them downtown. We want to make it easy for them to come downtown. We want them to experience downtown. And I think this is a great step for making the historical museum a solid institution for years to come. So I hope we see this in the context that it is, that this is, once again, a way to look and see how we can do things better. I think it is incredibly valuable effort and that we are involved in. I think it's worth it, and I hope that we see this investment as one that will pay off dividends in the future. I applaud those citizens who have given of their time, their money, their other resources to build these. Please don't go away. We need you. We want you. Any effort such as this does not survive and does not thrive without active involvement by citizens. This is not a city function. This is a community function. As many other things, I think it's another thing we've been talking about. We want to create community activities. The city government has a very important role to play in those community activities, but we are not the sole provider, and we cannot succeed and build these organizations and these activities to the level that they are that they should be and can be without active community and citizen involvement. So please, stick with us, help us to build upon this, and I see a great future. I would like to leave one thing. I think the Arizona Museum for Youth, I have to admit I wasn't that familiar with it until I actually started running for us. Been to it years ago. They do a wonderful job with limited resources. I hope that they take this opportunity to relook at what they're doing and how they're focused, because I will tell you, there's a lot of people who don't know what they do there. And I think we have a challenge in getting the word out and maybe looking at our branding and looking at our mission so that people completely understand what they do there. When you look at the Historical Society, I sort of get it. I know it's about history. Mm. When you look at the Museum of Natural History, I've been to enough of those, I don't even have to walk in without knowing what it is. When I look at AMI, I'm going, okay, the first question is, what do they do? And maybe that's one of the challenges we have, and as we go through this, maybe we can look at how we can better define and focus in and clarify what they provide to the public, because I'm not sure that there's a broad understanding as to exactly what AMI does. I know there is within the educational community and a select community, but we need a broad appeal. So that's one challenge I'd put out for them. Vice Mayor.
Oh, and early on in your comments when you talked about becoming bare bones, I would contend that the city of Mesa, compared to other cities, not just locally but across the country, as I spoke with many elected officials across the country, we are considered very bare bones. And the concern is we don't want to get to a point crossing a line where we impact the cultural awareness, the quality of life in such a way that it, in the long term, is such a detriment to the city. We have to maintain many of those elements in spite of the fact that they are not likely to sustain themselves independently, but they're critical for the future of our community, for the community itself, the feeling of community and the involvement. So we need to make sure that we don't get too far down the road of being bare bones, that we shoot ourselves in the foot in the long term, because it's the quality that we have, the quality of life, that's going to bring people here that want to be here, as opposed to just being what some people may think is their ideal, just to be a bedroom community, which cannot sustain itself in the long term. So we have to make sure we really take a good hard look and make sure we don't strip down too far bare bones. We have to maintain that. And I think this is a very good way of trying to keep these elements alive, knowing full well that they haven't fully sustained independently, but we have to get a working model that'll maintain them in the long term.
Thank you, and I appreciate those comments. And I think this council, from the day that we all took office, have been very clear that we are here to help build a community. and that we recognize the challenges we have. I mean, that's presented to us on a daily basis. But we've made decisions that balance the needs, what we believe the needs of the community and the role that city government can play in those. And, you know, if we talk about bare bones, we talk about things like that, I think we need to understand that we are committed as a council to not only maintaining but building this community, because we remember what made Mesa great in the first place. And what we're trying to do is to continue those things and build upon those things that made us a great community. And we can't lose sight of that. So thank you very much for that. Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Mr. Zietzman.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on energy efficiency conservation, not conversation, conservation block grants and stimulus. Stimulus, we need to stimulate our conversation. I guess I forgot, were any of those blue cards related to the subject that we just covered? Oh, okay. Mr. Scott.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. I'm Scott Boucher, Deputy Development and Sustainability Director, and I'm here today to talk about the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant Program. This program is part of the stimulus package. It's from the Department of Energy and is a formulary grant that's based on population, similar to the CDBG program that I think all of you are familiar with. There's $3.2 billion in the Department of Energy's budget for energy efficiencies, and Mesa's allocation in this program is $4.2 million. The goals in this program are to reduce fossil fuel emissions, reduce the total energy use of the eligible entities, which are your cities, counties, states, the Indian communities, and also to improve energy efficiency specifically in the building and transportation sectors. The timeline for this, because there's many different timelines in the stimulus package, is we have applications, even though we have an allocation of $4.2 million, we do need to have an application that we send in to the Department of Energy. That application is due by June 25th. In that application, we must have an energy efficiency and conservation strategy. And we will also have our eligible programs that we are proposing as part of this program in that application. The Department of Energy then has 120 days to review and approve that application. From the time of approval, we then have 18 months to allocate the money, the funds that we have for those programs that we proposed. That puts us at approximately February of 2011, and this is assuming we put in an application on June 25th, that the Department of Energy takes the full 4 months to review that application, and then 18 months after that would be February of 2011.
So, Scott, the application will include broad-based plans and things like that, but not specifics, and then we spend the time to break that broad-based plan down into specifics, and that's what's due by February?
What is due by June is programs. What the Department of Energy has hit on is programs, not project specific.
Okay.
And then
so we might say we want to improve energy efficiency in houses, so it might be an energy or a weather stripping or whatever it might be called, and then we come up with specific programs related to that?
Right, and then we come up with the specific, how they've broken it down is you have a program which would be energy efficiencies in buildings, and then you'd have specific projects that are either shading or weather stripping, something like that, that you would
put in.
So
the general one is what's due by June, and then the specifics are what are due by February.
No, by February, you have to have the money allocated in.
Gotcha. So you have to choose project. Who's going to do that and actually define the specifics.
And actually have those defined.
Okay, I gotcha.
Okay. And during that, one of the other things is there's quarterly reports that are associated with this program to keep DOE updated on our progress towards this program. So it's not like we won't be in communication with them between the time that they actually approve our application until 18 months later. There's quarterly reports that we'll be submitting throughout that time. Then we actually have 18 months from that February date to spend all of the money that has been allocated to us, and that would put us at August 2012. I have listed here all of the eligible expenses as part of this program. If you look at the ones with an asterisk on them, those are the ones that we're going to be proposing today, and I'll go into more detail on those programs later on in the presentation. The first one is the development of the conservation strategy. That's one of the eligible expenses as part of the program, and it's the only one that's an actual requirement of the program. So the first one that you see on here, you have to do as part of the program. There's money in there also for building energy audits to place renewable energy on city buildings, energy efficiency retrofits, energy efficiency and conservation strategies for buildings and facilities, development and implementation of transportation programs to make the transportation sector more energy efficient. Also, there's money in there for traffic signals and street lighting to make those more energy efficient as well. The process that we used is we were looking at this program from the beginning to select the programs that we would like to implement was we tried to look at, you know, what they've been saying as far as shovel-ready projects. Although you'll see in the energy efficiency, there's not a lot of shovels that are probably used when you're changing out light bulbs and that sort of thing, but these are the type of projects that we would be able to implement pretty quickly. We also looked for long-term energy savings. That's one of the things that DOE has hit on, that they don't want us just to spend the money and then it's over. What is the benefit beyond this program after you implement it? Also, we looked at reducing our city operating expenses. We do spend a lot of money on just our electric bills on an annual basis. And so we looked at, through that energy savings, how can we reduce the city's operating expenses?
Can we save more electrical money in the SRP area than we do in the city area?
That's one of the things that we're trying to focus on. And there is
I didn't just say that, did I?
There are actually rebates also, and there's other programs with SRP that we're looking at trying to leverage some of those dollars, and I'll get into that a little bit later. But that is one of the things we're hitting on, is trying to really send less money to SRP and keep it here in the city. Another thing is to use of the stimulus dollars instead of general fund dollars for the projects that we have.
And as an edit on that, I think continuing the theme that we've had in a lot of these stimulus presentations, I think the council has been very clear that we do not want to create not only saving, going above the using the stimulus dollars instead of general fund, we do not want to create situations where using the stimulus funds will create an obligation, an ongoing obligation that will tie up the general fund after the stimulus money runs out. So we need to make sure, I think everyone's in agreement on that, that whatever we take from the stimulus does not create an overhang or a hangover, future, I guess, obligation. Future obligations.
Hangover? Mayor Smith,
hangover. That would be a hangover.
My goal with this is actually to reduce that obligation with this program that we have by reducing the amount of money that we have to pay on our electric bill. So I agree with that, and hopefully we will have the opposite effect.
Great, thank you.
Now I'll get into the specific programs that we're looking at implementing. The first one is a solar installation at the CAP water treatment plant. There's a current R&D installation out there. We have put out a competitive RFP this week for up to 100 kilowatts on up to 1 acre of land at that site, and that power will actually be used at the Red Mountain Park. Also, the next one is energy-efficient city buildings. This is where it's at a program level and not a project level. What we're looking at is the different things that you can do as far as lighting, putting in more energy-efficient lighting, putting in more energy-efficient roofs with higher insulation, higher solar reflectivity indexes, where you have more of the solar energy that's reflecting off of the roof as opposed to be absorbed into the roof and creating it at higher heat factor that's going through. Also shading, solar installations, and also we've been looking at with our new facilities that will be built as far as our fire stations and police stations, what can we do to make those more energy efficient and use some of this money in those new buildings and see if we can get to a green building standard with this energy efficiencies. Some of the ones that we've called out specifically as possibilities are the main library, multi-generational center, and the municipal building. But we really do want to take a holistic view at these buildings and try and see what's the best bang for our buck, so to speak, in the energy efficiencies. Also, energy efficient street lighting. This would be retrofits of the street lights that we have. Currently, the technology, there's some questions about the technology, but the City of LA is doing a very comprehensive study with the Clinton Climate Initiative. That study is expected to come out in June of this year. We've been in discussions with the City of Los Angeles in regards to, you know, the results of their study. They have let us know, they can't give us all the information yet because it hasn't been released, but they have let us know that with our lighting standards and the way that our streetlights are, there's probably a couple of technologies that should work for the City of Mesa. We're actually starting a pilot project in the next couple of weeks where we're putting a couple of beta LED lights down by our 6th Street Service Center to see how those work. And then once the LA study comes out, we'd like to use whatever we think is going to work for Mesa and do more pilot testing with those other technologies so we can really look at what's the best lighting that we're getting out of those lights and what's the lowest energy use. And so base that off of a pilot test program. And what we would do here is there's about 20% of the residential lights currently that don't meet our lighting standard. So that's going to be the focus of these LEDs in the beginning. Now, if we replaced all of those lights, that would take up all of the money that we have in this package. So we're not proposing to just do street lights with this. With $1 million, we should be able to do about 20% of those that don't meet that lighting standard currently. So the hope is we'd get better lighting in residential neighborhoods for less energy, which in turn would save us money also, because we do spend a lot of money outside of our service area on street
lights. Now, when you say they don't meet our lighting standards, in what way don't they meet? They don't provide enough light, they use too much, or which?
It's
in the residential, it doesn't meet our standards.
Mayor, council members, what it does is they were built, the subdivisions were built or in an earlier time when we didn't have a standard or standards weren't there. They're just they're typically at intersections in residential areas that you'll see a light, but in between there's no lighting or limited lighting.
Okay, so they just don't throw out enough light to provide the safety standards we thought.
Would improve the lighting in neighborhoods.
Hopefully doing it at a lower
cost.
That is the hope. But we are going to do this through a pilot project to make sure before we do spend $1 million that, in fact, our goals are going to be met.
Yeah, we get more light for less money.
Right.
Exactly.
Councilmember Summers.
Are we getting more light for less energy use? Because it would seem paradoxical to throw out more light and end up increasing the amount of energy we use.
Councilmember Summers, that's where we're running into, as you mentioned, the pilot program and the program in L.A. They're trying to find lights to do that. Right now, street light LEDs that we've been able to find on the market don't do that. They actually put out more light but take more energy to do it. They're not as efficient as high-pressure sodium right now. So we have a couple of them out here we're testing. You mentioned the beta one. That looks very promising. We just got them in yesterday, and we're going to put them up next week.
Are all these technologies, are all these LED-based? Or are there the ones
there's some
LA
other types of lights. There's induction lights, and there's different types, but most of the focus has been on LED.
Okay. Vice Mayor?
Just from my own understanding, there's not a meter on each of those lights. How do they gauge how much energy we're actually using? Is there a built-in meter to the light itself? How do they know?
What we do is based on the size of wattage of the light itself is what we pay. We pay per light, but
It's a fixed rate per light.
That's correct. It's a fixed rate on size of watts that the light has, based on a time frame that it's used. They're not metered. Each one's not metered.
But, I mean, we know the wattage on the light. They know exactly how much energy they take. We know when they go on, when they go off, based on when the sun goes down and when it comes up. I mean, is that how basically we
That's correct. We have some of our lights that we actually internally meter just to verify the numbers and make sure they're correct.
Gotcha. Councilmember Higgins?
Just another personal information one. They last longer, LEDs, right? I mean, are they much, I understood that they had a longer life than the average high pressure sodium.
That's correct. They do last longer. Again, remember LEDs put off tremendous amount of heat trying to get the light levels up. So they will, okay. They possibly could cook themselves out there in the field. So from the manufacturer's, literature we get, yes, they should last longer, maybe up to 6 or 7 times longer than that.
So when you look at cost, do you include the cost of changing out the regular light? All that's included?
Yes.
Okay,
we
great.
Look at the life cycle cost of the whole unit.
Great, thanks.
The next program would be a transit corridor development plan. This is for the light rail from Tempe border to Gilbert Road along Main Street. This would be so that we could implement the zoning code, the form-based code, and what this would do is improve the energy efficiency through mixed use in the transit-oriented development, which is one of the things that's called out specifically in this program, is making transportation more energy efficient. Another one would be building and utility audits, looking at the possibility of solar development at city properties and facilities beyond what we had proposed earlier, and also using this information to make the best decisions, having a technical consultant on board. We do have a lot of this data ourselves, but having somebody that does this for a living and is an expert in the field so that we're assured that the decisions we're making on our buildings are the best decisions that we can make as far as energy efficiency, really trying to make this dollar go as far as possible by looking at detailed energy audits of the buildings and seeing what is the most energy efficient, whether it's the lighting, the roofing, the HVAC, whatever it may be, but really making some very knowledgeable decisions. Also, the leveraging of funds that I discussed before, there are non-stimulus funds that are available. SRP has a new program where it's going to be rolled out tomorrow, actually. We've been having a lot of discussions with SRP. So the details are coming out tomorrow. They've just kind of let us know about the program. They're going to have up to $150,000 per customer, which the City of Mesa is considered an SRP customer, and it's $50,000 per facility to do those building energy audits that I discussed earlier. So one of the things is to look at having, instead of just that $250,000 to do the building audits, we would now have $400,000, hopefully, to do those building audits, from doing $150,000 of that in SRP's service area. And then using the stimulus dollars from that energy audit in SRP's service area to implement those energy efficiencies at those buildings. An example would be the multi-generational center, which is a pretty high energy use building and is outside of our electric service area. It's in SRP's service area. There's also performance contracting that we're looking at those possibilities. That's really where you get a third party that comes in and they will take the upfront capital cost associated with the energy efficiencies and you pay them back over a period of time using the dollars that are saved from those energy efficiencies. And so we're also looking at performance contracting as a way to take these dollars and extend them beyond the life of this program. So with that is my presentation. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Councilmember Finter.
Thanks. I hope we, since these are stimulus funds assigned to Mesa, that we never miss the opportunity to keep those funds as close to home in professional services and contractors. Again, not advocating any protectionism, but since we're trying to take stimulus funds to stimulate Mesa, let's do what we can. So appreciate that. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Councilmember Summers.
Not too far away from that vein, Mr. Brady. I think I brought this up before. There, the federal dollars come with a lot of strings, one way or the other. One is making sure you have to actually allocate the money, spend the money. It has to be spent on certain things. I'm waiting. At some point, the federal government's going to make an example out of some community who doesn't spend the money wisely or properly according to the strings. So I would like to see, Mayor, as well, the city auditor as part of this next year, start watching how Mesa, as we receive these monies, have them continuously audit the monies to make sure that we're making the timelines, that we're spending it as directed. And it would also be good, too, to have them audit for impact of the general fund, as the mayor has brought up a number of times. We want to be careful that we're not tying ourselves down to long-term costs that we may not be able to afford. So if we could make sure that gets on the auditor's agenda, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Scott, thank you. The next item on the agenda is item 4. We'll talk about fees and charges for various city departments. 4A. 4B has been deleted from the agenda. We'll not deal with that today. That'll be discussed at a future meeting.
Good morning, Mayor and Council.
Mr. Odom, sir.
I was obviously anxious to get up here and do this presentation this morning. This is the last component that we have not presented of the budget to the council, so I'm seeing the finish line. That feels pretty good. Go through some of these. We're recommending several departmental fees and charges increases and totaling about $2.4 million affecting several funds. We'll go through these on an individual basis. We do have representatives from each of the departments here today that will answer any questions you'd have on any of their specific fees and charges. Arts and cultural, they're looking at some of their fees and charges for facility use. The Department of Sustainability, Development Sustainability Department, is looking at application fee on the outside of the city K county applicants for services. Environmental Programs Division is an increase in the federal environmental compliance fee. That is a cost recovery fee, and that's the only fee that we did not bring to you at the Audit and Finance Committee. So this has been recommended subsequent to that. It is a recovery, as I said, against some of the basin maintenance, some of the PM10 programs, some of those types of things that were mandated to do by the federal government. Falcon Field has various rate changes. The one thing I would point out is on the rental car concession fees. Based on the discussion that you had in a previous study session, they have gone back and looked at on and off property rental cars. So they have implemented that. That was net reduction of about $2,000 a year to the recommended fees from the original Audit and Finance Committee recommendation.
Keep going. Okay.
The library has some earbuds from the electronic distribution.
Excuse me. Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you, Mayor. I didn't know that that was it for Falcon. I just had a question of the detail sheet. We discussed it in Audit and Finance about the discount given to multiple tie-downs for a...
And I'll bring Corrine Nystrom up here.
And we were, I thought we were going to have more discussion on that before we all voted on it. Okay. I just, you know, again, there's a reason we charge for these things. And I think it was 20 users. I can't remember what the number was. Anyway, we're offering a 20% discount to multiple tie-down users. And I'm assuming that's for ease of, it's cheaper to send one bill to for 20 than it is to send out 20 bills. Something along those lines. I just think that at this time when we're doing some other fee increases, a 20% discount is just a really hefty discount to give to anybody for any service. So I just would like to share my displeasure and how I don't agree with that discount for the multiple users or however that wording is.
Mayor, council members, this particular proposed fee is basically to include in within that discount structure the helicopters, the large propeller aircraft, and the jet aircraft, which when the city council previously approved the discount for single engine and twin engine aircraft of 20 or more tie downs, these other types of aircraft were not included within that provision. So at the time that the original fees were proposed to the city council, the fee was based upon what other airports were charging for similar types of services.
Yeah, and I think in my estimation, it was in August of last year. I'm not sure if that was the previous council's recommendation that we approved, but I don't think we got into this kind of detail at this level. I would actually say that discount for the single engine should also be reevaluated, because I just, again, don't, it's a fee. If it was like 2% or something much smaller, because it is like a help in record keeping, that it would make sense. But that for both those situations, that big discount just isn't appropriate in my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Parks and Recreation has several rate adjustments, and we did provide all those details in your packet that was provided to you. And I have representatives to go over any of those items that you would like. Energy and Water Resources? Yes.
Councilmember Summers has a question.
Chuck, on the, and we addressed this a little bit at the whatever it is committee I'm leading today, Audit and Finance. I'm having one of those days. It seemed that a lot of, on some of the admission fees, particularly for aquatics program, there were senior discounts. In other communities, Mesa didn't have a senior discount. We are working on that, I understand. Though it probably won't be this year, it'll be what, for next season?
Yes, Mayor, Councilmember Summers. The aquatics is a unique individual because the program starts now, and so we've approved fees almost a year ago, and then so they'll go through this aquatic season. So the following aquatic season, we should be able to implement those changes to us and include a senior rate at that time.
Okay, is that going to go through the Parks Board and
exactly
have that looked at and see what the equity is among the other cities?
Yes.
For the similar services.
And we've already researched what other cities are charging for that fee and have those comparables, and so we'll take those to the Park Board here in the next couple of months.
Great. Thank you.
Councilmember Fender?
Had some feedback last night by a citizen in District 2 with regard to fees for summer aquatics camps. I think that's the right term, where it looked like it had nearly doubled to about $100. I'll probably have more questions along those lines. Very concerned, especially families with multiple kids, where you're now starting to talk about $400 or $500 for a summer camp aquatics. So, and again, you know, I had the opportunity to express the dire situation we're in, but maybe I could get some more information later about how those fees and they're spread out. So.
Absolutely.
Have we ever provided like family rates? I know we have family passes, or some people have family passes. Do we ever had family rates or things like that for classes, or has it always been on an individual?
Mayor, we do have family rates for our aquatics programs for open swim,
yeah,
where you can buy a family pass. In terms of our summer recreation, we do not have a family pass per se to where three or four kids could enter the same camp at a family rate. That is something that we certainly could look into, because that is the concern with larger families to where they are trying to fund, you know, three and four kids into a camp. I know that we can come back at a later time and give you more information, but we are on top of that right now. We're reaching out to our Parks Foundation, which is a nonprofit, and to some other organizations for some scholarship funds. And so you'll be seeing a press release and some information coming out shortly, as soon as we tie up all those loose ends, to where those families could reach out and take advantage of the scholarship fund if they're in those types of situations with large families or have low income, to try to get some of those kids into our summer programs.
Okay, thank you.
From the Energy Resources and Water Resources Departments, largely these are the fees that are set aside from utility rates based on your consumption. Deals with your customer service, those types of fees. Most significant changes have to do with streamlining, putting all the fees and charges related to this in one book, making it a little easier for all the customer service people to use. And had several changes recommended to their overall rates and changes. Terms and conditions were clarified, just billing and select due date, budget payment plans, disconnect circumstances, so further clarification of what we've already tried to accomplish on the streamlining. And with that, take any questions.
Mr. Brady.
So, Mayor and Council, we are including these in all these fees in the proposed budget, unless we hear today that we shouldn't. The question on the Falcon Field, I guess we need some direction. We can move forward this year with that and continue to look at all those discounts. But as it's being proposed today, as it made it through audit and finance, the tie-down discount is included in the proposed budget. So unless otherwise directed, we could either keep it the same or we need to make the change.
I think that discount is a valid issue that we need to look at. I'm not sure we can come to a resolution before we have to move on right now. I think right now we probably need to talk about it more, since it's embedded in a much larger issue that has to be addressed with many different facets. I would say that we need to look at that, and but maybe not try and push that to get it on board before this budget cycle.
And we'll take it out. We'll make that a change in the fees.
Yeah, why don't we throw that in with the other issues, if that's okay with you, Councilmember Higgins? That it's on the list of all the other things we're addressing at Falcon Field, because I don't know where one ends and one begins, because you have a lot of other considerations as it relates to multiple discounts when you get into FBOs and those kind of things that would potentially be affected by it. I don't want to rush into that.
So, Mayor, are we going to remove the discount because it's currently not in there? Because, I mean,
if it's currently not in there.
Right.
It's currently not in there, so we want to include a discount.
Let's leave it as is.
We're essentially following it.
Yes, let's leave it as is, but that will be on the table with all the other discussions.
Great.
But let's just leave it as is, okay?
Okay.
Fine. Thank you.
Thanks for clarifying that. Okay. Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item is the acknowledged receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. I have a motion by Councilmember Richardson, second by Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor?
Aye.
We'll now hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Vice Mayor? Oh, you go ahead.
Yesterday we had a grand opening of Pro's Ranch Market at Southern and Stapley, and very, very successful opening. In fact, I went back last night and spoke with the owners again, the dad and two of his sons that were still there, and they actually said this far exceeded their expectation. This is by far their biggest opening of a store, and they totally did not anticipate how busy it would be last night. In fact, it was busier last night than it was yesterday morning.
There's no place to park.
And so, very successful opening.
Thank you. And if you haven't, I always like to plug Mesa businesses, especially new investments. But the center at Stapley and Southern, the northwest corner, the quality of construction, the architecture, it's just it's significant. It's pretty impressive. And the store itself is impressive. And, you know, I love all businesses in Mesa, especially when they're successful. But I'd I put in a plug for any new business, and especially this one, because I think it will. I don't know what your expectations are, but this is a very good addition to Mesa and a wonderful investment by an organization that has proven themselves to be a good business operator. So I appreciate that, and invite anyone to go check out the whole center.
Excellent.
Thank you. You want to talk about that? No, Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to say we, I think the whole group almost attended the Soul Focus ribbon cutting for their new facility in Mesa at McDowell and Greenfield-ish. And we're very excited about the great technology that they're producing in Mesa. And it's a new concept for solar panels that have a little higher efficiency. And we're very excited to see them progress. And I think they are unable, we can't get any more solar panels for the next couple of years because they're fully booked, I believe, in production. So if you want to put your order in for your home solar panel, you got to get it in there now so you'll have it in a couple of years. Thank you.
Does that come with a volume discount?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
No volume panel discount.
No.
All right. Okay, anything else? Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, Council, we have a study session council meeting on May 4th, Monday, May 4th. And also, the next City Hall at the Mall will be on Saturday, May 9th. So everybody is invited to come out and buy the Mother's Day gift the Saturday before Sunday and come and meet, join us at the City Hall at the Mall at the Fiesta Mall on May 9th. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
Just a reminder, this weekend is the Arizona Special Olympics that will be held at Mesa Community College. So if you have time, go out and cheer on some great athletes right here in Mesa.
Yeah, and I'd like to give a plug about Special Olympics. We don't realize what a significant presence they have in Mesa. Not only the events this week, which are the state Special Olympics, which will bring thousands of people into our city, but they've also held swimming competitions and basketball and Mr. Evans, what else? All sorts of athletic that have gone on for the last couple of months, couple 3 months, and including the torch ride, which Chester's Harley-Davidson, which took place a couple 3 weeks ago with over 2,000 riders, that also was related and is the major fundraiser for the Special Olympics. So the Special Olympics have been in our community and have a significant impact on our community. So I invite you to go out and see what's going on, but also thank them for their commitment to Mesa. Okay, anything else, Mr. Brady? All right, the last item on the agenda is items from citizens present. We have a unique situation here. We had an item on our agenda review, item 7D, I believe, that relates to regulations for safe and efficient operation at Falcon Field Airport. We have several citizens that have shown up to talk about this under items for citizens present. Normally what we would do is on Monday when this was actually introduced or spoken about as part of the meeting, that would be the time that we talk about it. since you're all here, we'll go ahead and, I guess, reopen our review of the agenda and allow you to speak on this item, understanding that if somebody had been here and wanted to at least see how this went through and did not speak, they will also have a chance to address this issue on Monday night on the introduction of the ordinance, and then again 2 weeks later when we actually vote on the ordinance. So we're going to go ahead and allow, if that's okay.
Mayor, that's fine. If I just might make a correction, it's not an ordinance, it's a resolution, so it will be considered and voted upon on Monday.
So on Monday when we have the final consideration, they will also have the opportunity to speak on that. So this is a little bit different than normal because we can then comment and ask questions back and forth on it. Because if we can't, then I want to put this off.
No, you can, Mayor, because it's already on the agenda, okay. So you can go back.
All right. So we will start with Dennis Lampson. And while Dennis is coming up, speaking of that, we did have another event. We had the Falcon Field Open House. We forgot, which was very well attended and which was a great thing. I'm sorry, what? Oh, okay. Well, you want to talk about that, Councilmember? Well, you are going to. Councilmember Richens.
Before we... Yesterday, there was an event honoring the service of many of our city employees with 5 and 10 years under their belt, and it was a really well-done event, and I just wanted to express how impressed I am continually by our city employees and what a great job they do and their commitment to our city.
Mr. Lamson, thank you for being here. You have 3 minutes. Thanks.
Honorable Mayor and members of the City Council, my name is Dennis Lamson. I reside at 1846 East Glen Cove here in Mesa. For 35 years, I practiced as a CPA here in town and was a senior partner in the largest CPA firm in Mesa. Now retired, but I'm acting as the financial advisor and consultant to Structures, Inc. and related entities. One of those entities is the landlord of Sabina Air Training Center, Inc. And getting right to the point and cutting to the chase, if you read the resolution, not so apparent from the resolution, but if you go to the website, www.keepfalconfieldsafe.com, it's clear that this resolution is aimed at basically, for lack of a better way to put it, driving Sabina Air Training Center, Inc., out of business at the airport. I'm surprised at that as a general comment. I'm surprised at that in a time when, first of all, I'm sure that every one of you ran on a program of promoting economic success of Mesa. And here in a time when we're in the economic circumstances that we are, you're considering running a substantial contributor to that economic welfare out of business at the airport. More specifically, to the key reason I am here, and as an example of that economic impact, if that company leaves operations here in the community and at the airport, the economic impact or the revenue loss to one of the client companies that I represent will be in the multiple tens of millions of dollars to that entity alone. Over the period, the term of the leases involved, it will be multiple tens of millions of dollars. And if that loss does occur, the city will be sued for that economic impact. There's no question about it. I would add to that, as one who did a lot of litigation consulting during my 35 years in that field, I would love, if I were an attorney, to have that case. And I would be happy to work with one in pursuit of it. Enough said, and you will be informed of that officially by the attorneys representing this company. That's all the remarks that I have.
Thank you, Mr. Lamson. I'm a little bit lost, and maybe before other ones come up, because I'm not hearing that there was any maybe you could explain a little bit, Mr. Brady, because I was never under the assumption that what we're trying to do is targeted at one.
Well, I'll tell you, there have been conversations directly with representatives from Sabina on a variety of different points. As a matter of fact, letting them know that the city was intending on adopting some rules and regulations regarding the safe flights
and at the airport. This is not news. I don't think anyone's ever suggested that we're doing anything to try to discourage them from doing business or moving them off the airport. We do think that there are opportunities to adopt some rules and regulations that will allow the airport to function better for all tenants, as well as those who live around the airport.
And I think the idea is that we want to clarify, you know, for example, the city council does not set, unless Mr. Evans has left, I haven't seen anything on our agenda where we make rules for the operation of swimming pools during the summer. That's something that staff usually happens. And any other city operation, I can't remember. I've only been in office a little less than a year, but I don't remember where we've set rules as a council, specific rules for the operation of city assets. Unless I'm missing something
right
on that. So, I mean, my understanding, maybe I'm missing the intent of this, maybe I'm missing something, was simply to clarify and to give the city staff the ability to set whatever rules as it relates, because basically they're, in the past, the airport has set their own rules, correct?
Correct.
So what's, I mean, are we simply...
This is really a clarification of the of that role and that responsibility.
Okay. All right. Councilmember Higgins.
Just a clarification. It's just a clarification of what the rules are. The city, you, Chris, have always been direct. I mean, you're responsible for airport operations. The airport director reports to you.
Correct.
And I think there was some misunderstanding. I've gotten some emails about that. And I explained to the residents that this is just a clarification of that role, that the city manager is the city manager and the airport falls under your authority. And I just think there was some misunderstanding, and that this just clarifies that that's the chain of command.
Well, let me ask something. Do Ms. Spinner, right now, could the city manager in the airport, once again, reminding the difference between a swimming pool and the airport is that we get the FAA involved, because we do have operations that involve the tower and other things like that, which involve the FAA. Do we have to do anything on that? Could the city manager right now make rules in conjunction with the FAA related to the operations of Falcon Field?
Mayor, I believe he could. What we are doing here is to try and ensure a complete transparency in terms of the process that's being followed. You know, as the mayor and council knows, there's always a question about the council sets policy, the city manager sets the rules and regulations to implement those policies. To ensure there is no future challenge in terms of a policy or a rule that is established on Falcon Field, does that fall within the policy realm or rule and regulation? We don't know exactly what rules and regulations will be implemented and adopted. So just to ensure that there is transparency and a clear delegation of authority, we've recommended that the council ask the city manager through this resolution to proceed in setting proper rules and regulations for the safe operation of Falcon Field.
Now, just like anything else in the city, if the city manager sets rules and regulations that the council does not agree with, certainly we have the final say on that.
Yes.
And if people don't like what's been done, they can certainly, I don't want to say appeal, but in a sense it's appeal. They can come to the city council, and we as policy can embed rules and regulations in that.
That's correct, Mayor.
Okay.
And Mayor, I also take this. This is kind of the evolution, if you would, of the airport. As it's grown in sophistication and variety of diversity of tenants and its activity levels, it's just become obvious to us that we probably need to move towards a more formal process and clarity of how we go about doing
well,
the business.
To refer to what Mr. Lamson brought up, I will say that, you know, but for Sabina, you're right. We probably aren't having this discussion. It's not that, it's certainly my discussions with people around the airport are not simply focused on Sabina, but the operations of Sabina have brought to light certain issues that go beyond Sabina that really speak to the evolution of the airport. The airport has changed, and it's changed dramatically. And it's not just Sabina that's changed it. It's other things have changed it as it grows from the sleepy little airport on the edge of town that it used to be into a vibrant town and airport in an urban area. So, okay. I mean, there's no doubt that the increased activity was accelerated by Sabina's arrival. That's no doubt. But it pointed out other issues that go beyond what Sabina's doing. Okay. And I don't know whether that helps or hurts, but that's my understanding. I don't know if anyone else has a different understanding as to why would we would even consider this. But let's go on with Joe Riley from Riley Aviation. Mr. Riley.
My name is Joe Riley. I have Riley Aviation at Falcon Field, 2745 North Greenfield. General mailing address, the tower. I think you're right, Mayor, that we have a certain amount of this that needs a little bit of vetting. You had a couple things here in this resolution which basically said that the Mesa shall adopt and may restrict or deny use of the airport for student training or for some other purpose deemed incompatible with safety under local conditions. I think the FAA guidelines call that peculiar to that airport, not particular to that airport. I think that's a misquote.
Yeah, and I think we just got a revised version that does change that to peculiar.
The other thing is that the resolution says the authority is given to the city manager to adopt feasible and appropriate rules, regulations, and fees deemed necessary to regulate, implement, and enforce safe and efficient operations, which to a lot of the folks out here, if I were to ask for a show of hands, you know, there's a lot of people here to speak to it, that kind of overwhelming control has got them concerned. Their concern is that, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself, is that a group, an individual, or somebody who's not intimately involved in the aviation community might make a rule in violation of FAA guidelines. And as you know, and you mentioned it before, the FAA is what really trumps a lot of our activities. If we violate FAA rules, we violate perhaps with one complaint our funding. And taking the funding away from the airport would just devastate that community out there. And that's where I'm coming from, is I just don't want to see the I just don't want to see the mistakes made.
And I understand what you're saying. My understanding in reading the rules are that the FAA is the final decision maker, and they can come and negate rules. Now, isn't that a leap that they would see a rule and they would deny funding? Wouldn't they just come in and say that rule is oversteps, it's unreasonable? I can't remember what the exact language is in the agreement. Wouldn't they just come in and say you can't implement that rule or back off on that?
They can say that. But as I understand it, the community can then say, we're going to stick to our own rules.
Well, yeah, in that case, if we basically deny or go against the FAA, then we would, because exactly. the terms of us receiving federal funding state that we're going to follow the FAA rules. And if we don't follow the FAA rules, then I guess we would consciously say we don't want any more FAA funding.
That's exactly right.
Okay. All right.
And so, you know, if there's a number of people who will speak behind me, I assume, that have had negotiations with the city, and they are going to have some direct conflicts with FAA, and according to their interpretation. But those are my concerns briefly. There's a. I also want to.
Can I ask you one more thing? Because you raise an interesting point. When you say according to their interpretation, what I've found out in this whole thing is that there seems to be a lot of interpretations going around.
There is.
And wouldn't it, then. I mean, let me pose a question to you. Wouldn't it be nice to have a single person you can call? And if you want, I'll give you Mr. Brady's phone number because we like you to call him. Wouldn't it be nice to have a single point where we could focus on and say, here's where the rules are made, and then everybody can come together to work out an interpretation? And then if they don't agree with it, they can...
It would. I tend to think also, though, that some of the input that's come back to me is a lot of this is being generated more by politics, and that is that there were complaints generated by citizens about noise. And as you know, a B-25 or the B-17 taking off makes a heck of a lot more noise than, you know, Sabina's katanas, those little two-seaters. And I think that's generated some of this resolution. And that's been some of the feedback that I received.
Councilmember Kavanaugh?
This is a question from Ms. Spinner. As I read the resolution, we're delegating the authority to Mr. Brady to draft these resolution, these regulations, but it also indicates, isn't it, that the council has the is going to be in the process to ratify, that if the manager proposes resolutions, it comes to the council for ratification? On page 2 of the resolution?
Yeah, Councilmember Kavanaugh, let me ask Donna to come up, because I'm not, Donna's been working on the program, so she'll understand what the process is that's intended.
I'm sorry, Councilman.
You can come over by me. Uh-oh. We'll all hang out together.
All righty. Councilman Kavanaugh, I think you need to turn to the resolution that's in your packet.
And I'm looking at it right now.
Okay, great.
And I thought it requires the manager to present the rules to council for review, and it says possible ratification.
No, I think what you, I don't think you're looking at the one from the council packet.
I'm looking at the one that was the most recent
if you
one.
Would, if
Is there a
focus,
different other than the peculiar?
I think you should focus on the one in the council packet.
Oh. Okay.
Which is what I'm looking at.
Okay, great.
No.
So, I mean, I'm looking at page 2 of 2, and it says the city manager shall at least once every 2 years submit to the council any rules adopted pursuant to this delegated power for council review and possible ratification.
You know, I think what you're looking at is not the copy that is in the council packet, and I think Ms. Spinner is bringing that over to you right now.
Okay.
Okay. The intent of the process is that the city manager will be able to adopt some regulations after getting input from a community group that has already been formed, where of all the stakeholders that have been involved, there are representatives from the airport and neighbors, and I believe someone from Sabina is on it as well. And so the intent is to have all the stakeholders meet and reach some consensus on safety regulations that will then be recommended to the city manager, and the city manager in conjunction with the city manager in conjunction with the airport and the committee that was formed will then be able to present these new regulations.
Great, and again, I apologize. I was looking at the memo that we received this morning.
I think that memo is in error and should be.
I think so too.
Should be.
Okay.
Dumb.
Right.
Okay.
Because it has changes other than the peculiar.
And my follow up question is are there other rules that are adopted by the city manager that never come to the city council?
Certainly, many departments, certainly throughout the city code, there are departments that are making rules. Mm-hmm. This is a sort of unusual case because, with the FAA involved, we just wanted to make sure it was very clear that there was a clear delegation of rulemaking and that the council was aware of it. As you know, on the national level and all through government, the goal is to have transparency, and this mm-hmm. resolution delegating the authority was just to make clear that that the city manager had the authority to adopt these rules. And certainly there's always the political opportunity for codification at some later date or an appeal by anyone to the council if they have any concerns about any of the rules, and the council can then look at them.
Okay, thank you, Council. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead. That's it. Councilmember Summers?
Well, that raises a question, something you just said, that we wanted to make it clear that the city manager had the authority. Is this changing anything? Has the city manager always had the authority and we're just reaffirming it? And if so, why are we reaffirming it? Was there a
really
lack of clarity?
Really, it's the whole involvement of the FAA, because normally it's just the city manager authorizing and making regulations, usually through their department heads, making rules and regulations. But we thought we ought to, with an overabundance of caution, have it very clear, because at some point the FAA may want to look at the regulations if there are complaints, and then it's clear that there's been a delegation of the rulemaking.
But I guess that doesn't answer the question. We don't have to do anything.
No.
And it doesn't change anything.
It doesn't change anything. What this is, it's to
it was
clarify.
An attempt to make sure everybody knew what was going on, and so
and
the
we as a council
community
have agreed.
Notification, okay. Correct.
But right now, the city council does not have to approve Mr. Brady, anything that goes on at Falcon Field, as long as it doesn't violate, we set policy there, but individual rules and regulations are made every day at Falcon Field without the council agreeing to it, or without the council having to agree to it.
Involvement.
So we can enact this, the mayor signs it, changes nothing. We vote against it, mayor doesn't sign it, it changes nothing, the authority's still there.
But there's been an opportunity for the community to see that it's been considered and that right. This is really the intent.
And to talk about it and to, you
and
know,
to
do what we're doing today.
And start to get input. Because the community group has been formed already.
Okay.
And was so there, the input
was,
is coming.
Is the group unclear on who dictates what the role of the FAA is, what the role of city manager is? Was there some lack of clarity there? I'm just
the
curious.
The group has
the
just had their first meeting, so they're just getting their feet wet. So I don't believe that there is... We haven't gotten to that step yet. It's just parallel paths.
Okay, Councilmember Higgins.
I just wanted to answer Councilmember Summers. There has been people did not realize that the city manager had the ultimate authority over not the ultimate, but was responsible
rulemaking
for that
authority.
Rulemaking authority. So I think that was just again some clarification, transparency in government, and that's why this was part of that. Because I've had people thought that it was its own little entity. Like the airport authority.
As it is at Phoenix Mesa yeah. Gateway right. Airport.
Like for example, right. I'm chairman of the Gateway right. Airport right. Authority, and the Airport Authority does not make specific rules at Phoenix
That's,
Mesa Gateway.
So
Airport Management does in conjunction with the FAA, and the Airport Authority sets policy, but we don't get into any rulemaking.
Correct.
So, okay.
If I may, was it just a question of the city manager's role, or is there a question of where the FAA fits into this?
No, I think it was more of a city man. I really think people thought the airport operated in its own little environment without any city manager council oversight.
Okay.
That
okay.
has been the kind of feedback that I've received from people.
Okay.
We could just run this video over and over and
Mr. Riley, I'm sorry. We I don't know if we got sidetracked or followed up on what you were talking about, but do you have anything? Do you have anything else to finish up with? I apologize.
But by the way, is this resolution, was it on the consent agenda for next meeting? Was that the case?
It was. No, it's a resolution. It was, but it would have been pulled.
Okay.
So
yeah, because I would ask that it be pulled.
Well, anyone that shows up to want to talk about it, it gets pulled. So
okay.
It would have been pulled.
Yeah, and I think that probably scared a lot of folks too.
Oh, well, okay.
But thank you for doing that.
I understand that.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. The next one, Mr. John Manross.
Actually, I don't have any comments.
Thank you, John. Mr. Manross has stated on his card that he opposes 7B. Samantha Hertzler. Sam?
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, District Council members. I am the general manager and owner with my husband of Tango One Aviation. We're a fixed-based operation. We supply fuel, ground services, and everything else that's needed for the progress of business related to Falcon Field and anybody who decides to fly into it. We're also the fuel supplier for Sabena Aviation and CAE, and we have done that since they arrived at Falcon Field. We have some serious concerns, and I'm not speaking on behalf of everybody else who's doing business at the airport just for Tango One, but collaboratively we're all together in this. We oppose the delegation of the city to be given the authority to the feasible rules and regulations and fees deemed necessary, and we also want this pulled from the agenda on Monday, and I'm sure there will be a significant showing of other businesses here on Monday to make sure that this does not get passed without further meetings with the businesses and the city airport operations manager. I have prepared a very long speech, and I'm sure this is not the time to relay all this information. The ad hoc committee has been formed, and they, as you have already noted, that it's only had one meeting. There's another meeting set for today, and I don't think that this council has been fully been advised of all the situations that are involved with appointing the city manager as the one to be the overall authority. Without further discussion, I think the ad hoc committee needs to bring and present further data to all of you before anything gets passed.
Thank you. And your husband serves on that? committee.
He is on that committee.
Good.
And he has sufficient data, because a lot of this does relate to the noise complaints, which I believe are very vocal right now. I'm also aware of the fact that...
Yeah, we're getting noise from both sides. it's sure. Loud on both sides, I'll tell you.
I'm sure. We're trying to remain calm and collect about this, but right now there's a lot of displeasure with everything that is going on, and that'll be relayed through the committees that are being presented to you for further information. But I please ask that you do not make any final resolution until you've heard all of the separate entities that have come together to present data to you from a fuel cleanliness standpoint. The EPA is involved. Aviation is one of the most overregulated industries, and we're getting hit from all sides. And I think the ultimate disappointment is that from a city local level, this attack is greatly, I guess, disappointing all the businesses here. So I'll supply all of my concerns in writing to you all so that it can be...
And just so everyone, we've talked a lot about the ad hoc committee, but if anyone doesn't understand, because these issues have been raised, the city manager's office formed with Natalie Lewis, who reports directly to the city manager as the head, an ad hoc committee, which was formed of businesses, the pilots, neighbors, and Sabina's also on that committee to try and work through the issues that have been raised. And there's a lot of other issues than what we've talked about today. And the idea is to create a forum where this information and these issues can be discussed, and hopefully come up with some recommendations, or certainly, if not recommendations, then added communication that allows us to be able to look at the information you're talking about.
Well, just bear in mind that the airport does have a lot of mom-and-pop operations in there. Sabina and CAE are working with all of us to bring and keep revenue to the city of Mesa, and the CAE-Sabina group also bring revenue from all over the world to Mesa. They are not outsourcing and taking their business overseas yet, but if we push them away, others will soon follow. There have been plenty of businesses that have moved away from Falcon Field because of all the politics involved, and they have been welcomed with open arms in other airports around the valley. And this is a great concern for us, because if people like CAE are pushed out of Falcon Field, then others will follow because of a few noise complainers who are not really understanding the revenue that this airport and the businesses involved in this airport are bringing to the city.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Summers.
Not to beat a dead horse here, but for the city of Pennington. Yeah, I know. So I'm going to beat it anyway with the city attorney. Again, this doesn't give city manager any new authority. It's just a statement of what his authority is and has been.
It clarifies his authority in the direction from council to take this problem and try to resolve it as best you can. So, okay.
And none of the language would add any new authorities or delegation.
No.
Even the language about the training?
Yes, the language in the resolution actually quotes the FAA rules and regulations, and they talk about the property owner or the airport owner may establish rules and regulations. So the FAA rules say the airport owner. This is simply clarifying that the council is asking the city manager to take the FAA rules and implement them.
And if I'm correct, Donna, there's language specifically that talks about the city's ability to set rules for flight schools.
Yes.
So the language we put in here is not something we created. It's something we actually cut and pasted out of existing.
Yeah. Let's make it clear, because we're going back now to say this is a Sabina issue. And granted, the honest is that Sabina's operations raised these issues to the surface. There are many of these issues that have been lingering or simmering, below the surface for a long time. We've had noise complaints of Falcon Field for years. You always do when you have airports. Sabina certainly raised those issues that had been simmering to a much higher level, brought them out in the open. It sort of opened what I think were some wounds. But once again, these rules and regulations are not targeted or wouldn't be targeted or only apply to a Sabina or anyone else. They would be across the board. So, correct. I mean, one of the ramifications that we have to look at as we look at how Falcon Field is operated is that we make a rule and regulation, it applies to everybody. And we certainly have to consider the fact that it is going to impact people other than Sabina or Tango One or whoever it is. It's going to have a universal impact. So, okay, Councilman Richens.
I just have a technical question for you, Debbie. On the the last paragraph of page one on the resolution specifically names Chris. If in 50 years Chris was no longer city manager, would that council have to readopt this resolution? I'm trying to phrase that in a way that was.
Why don't we just say the city manager?
Yeah,
we'll take the name out, council member. That's
you have been. You have been eliminated. I didn't want
to say
terminated.
I was trying to phrase that in a way that was
eliminated,
not threatening.
Are we calling you out of retirement to make it?
Okay. The last card we have is from Mr. Bob Hayes. Mr. Hayes?
That's a good catch.
Mayor Smith, members of the council. I'm Bob Hayes. I'm with Sabina. And I'd like for you to know that you have a wonderful tenant at the airport, a very viable tenant, and one that contributes a lot to the community. I'd also like to say that Mesa is very fortunate and blessed that they have two great airports. Gateway obviously is going to be a star of the future. Falcon Field is now. And the more we can make them better, the better Mesa will be. And I happen to be a Mesa resident for the last 14 years, so I certainly want to see it. Now, if I may speak, not to what has been said, but to Donna? To Donna's remarks about the authority that is given the city. That falls under order number 5190-0.6A, which was enacted in 1989. And it does say, in the interest of safety, and of course, I know our school is in the interest of safety, and I think every operator at the airport is, it says that the city or the owner may impose reasonable rules or regulations. However, and it talks about student training. However, if you go on to the next page, same paragraph, what it says, it may be appropriate to initiate an FAA airspace study to determine the efficiency and utility of the airport when considering the proposed restriction. In all cases, the FAA will make its final determination of the reasonableness of the airport owner's restrictions which denied or restricted use of the airport. It's all in the same paragraph. Then we look at another FAA document, Circular 150/5190-6, where it talks about exclusive rights or discrimination. Those definitely apply in this case because you're talking about exclusive rights if you deny a particular operation of an aviation facility. Student training is one of those things. It also says you shall not discriminate, which means if you're going to say to Sabina, as a student training school, you cannot train your students here, you can say also to Tango One, you cannot pump fuel here. So, you know, the discrimination thing, it's really a very much of a legal battle that we're going to face if should you go forward with this. Now, Sabina, as a company, and as long as I've been there, which is going on 3 years, has always tried to respond to any noise complaints, safety actions, or what have you. In fact, we've never had an accident on this field. although the website says there's been four accidents here, it's inferring that it was ours. That's not true. They infer 800 operations a day. That could very well be. But of those 800, we have approximately 100 flights a day that originate at Falcon Field. They also return, so that's 200. Now, 800 is a little bit of a stretch when you start blaming it on a particular operator. So the only thing I'm after, and I am on the ad hoc committee, by the way, and we have a meeting this afternoon. It's a matter of clearing the air, getting the facts out about what we have, getting people to cooperate, and Sabina certainly is willing to cooperate. We've already initiated several different procedures to quieten the neighborhood noise and to have an understanding between the group and ourselves. So I just want to let you know that Sabina is committed to that. We appreciate all of the support and help that we get from the airport. We appreciate the staff out there, Corrine and her staff. We work very, very well together, and we hope to continue to do that. Now, if you'd like to have asked me some questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Any questions? I appreciate your willingness to cooperate. I would like to say please use the ad hoc committee and work. I can understand the concern. There's a lot of emotions that are really running rampant in this on both sides. Airplanes seem to do that. Passionate people on both sides with airplanes. You know, what we try to do as a city is we try to strike a balance. And that means, I guess, if we come up with some solution that nobody's happy with, then we've probably done a pretty good job because everyone's so passionate about it. Not that that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get a solution where the airport can exist and can thrive, and it can be good neighbors and coexist with the people who live around that. We really are. I would suggest on a personal note, Mr. Hayes, that you, Sabina, can go a long way toward cooperating, and I will tell you there have been times in the past where I think there are things you can do more as far as operational that really I don't believe interrupt your business. I don't know that they interfere with your ability to succeed. I do believe that they will go a long way toward making people feel more comfortable about not only sound but the safety. And I will say, you know, personally as a pilot and someone who lives in the neighborhood, I'm concerned when I have 3 and 4 student pilots in a pattern at 11 o'clock at night doing touch and goes on a non-towered airport. That's a safety issue for me, sir, because there's going to be an accident there. And I think that's an issue that can be easily, through operational changes, can be addressed by Sabina. It does not affect your business in one way. And I want you to succeed. I want you to be very successful. I think touring your facility and seeing how you conduct business, I think you have a business model and a management that can succeed, but there are things that I believe you can do to move your operations that I don't believe it affects you or Tango One or whatever, but that will go a long way toward rectifying some of the situation. I would encourage you to have those discussions in the ad hoc committee. Use that. I hope everyone uses it to air their differences and to hopefully come up with some reasonable solutions that will accommodate both your needs and also the I believe the relevant demands and desires and worries of the neighbors. So I appreciate your willingness to participate. Vice Mayor.
As this has evolved this morning, I'm wondering, is it really necessary to move forward with this delegation of authority in that, even though I don't know how many times it's been stated, that authority already exists, we still had people come up and say, don't do this. Why is it necessary to move it forward right now? Because what I can see Monday night is you're going to have a whole slew of people getting up, stating the same thing over and over again, when the fact is nothing changes.
Well, and it looks like we're picking at a wound that may not need to be picked at. Let the ad hoc committee do
it. Let the ad hoc committee work through stuff before this even comes back again. Just remove it for now.
Do we have any feelings on that from other council members? Any objections to doing that?
I will concur with the Vice Mayor.
Okay, why don't we remove item 7D from the agenda? Let's let the ad hoc committee, but the idea being that if there needs to be clarification, and there might need to be, that we can bring it back at any time.
We'll just clarify it now.
Just say, hey, just city manager is the guy we're going through on this. Deal with him.
Okay, I mean, the direction from this council, I think part of this issue is, as you council can understand, is this is a very...
emotional.
Well, it's emotional, and we've already been put on notice as far as lawsuits today.
Aren't they already lining up at the courthouse?
And so the thought is, part of this, too, is to make sure there's a very clear delegation, because we have, in most areas like swimming pools, for example, we don't have a lot of other jurisdictions overseeing what we're doing other than maybe the county health department. But here you have a federal agency that we're working side by side with. And so part of that is that clarification. I don't have a problem moving forward without it. As we move forward to adopt rules and regulations, which we plan on doing out of the airport, because it's become apparent to us as we've met with the different stakeholders, neighbors, tenants, that we will be adopting rules and regulations. That is just clear that is the role that the city believes it has the purview to do, and we'll be moving forward in doing that. As we consult, and there's obviously an outreach process with everyone, and I suspect not everyone will always appreciate any rule or regulation we put in place, but we do plan on moving in that direction.
Okay. Is that clear direction that as we work through the ad hoc committee in this process that Mr. Brady is...
To blame.
Mr. Brady and city management is the one to work with the tenants through the ad hoc committee to come up with resolutions and can set rules and regulations.
Sir, Mayor, I would support that. It seems like an olive branch. Just don't beat us over the head with it, okay?
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, if someone calls us, we're going to refer them to Mr. Brady. Now, at the point in time when we make rules and regulations, and if there's, we can revisit that. But for right now, Mr. Brady and the city management, Natalie, through the ad hoc committee, is the one that we're delegating as dealing with this issue and this problem. Any objection to that? For the time being, yes.
Again, and we clarify the fact that there is no difference in how we're operating today or tomorrow. It's always been in the city manager's.
And we're just, I think what we're saying is as a council that we're recognizing that fact. Yeah. Without going forward with a formal resolution, which obviously concerns a lot of people and maybe overkill. Okay? Mr. Hayes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Ms. Crocker, do we have any other requests to speak?
No, ma'am.
Thank heavens. No, really, thank you, all of you. This is a good process. And I will say one thing, Mr. Riley. It is a political process, and that's how it should be. That's how it should be. I mean, being able to come here and talk, get through, that is a political process. Listening to your concerns, listening to neighbors, that's how politics works, and thank heavens for it. That's a great process in my mind. Not always a perfect process, and very often a very messy process, but it's a great process, and it's the one we have.
Move for adjournment.
We have a motion to adjourn from Vice Mayor, second from Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you so very much. We are adjourned.